Hello and welcome. You're listening right now to the very first episode of an exciting new podcast. It's called Heard and Not Seen, and it's from Barnardo's, the children's charity. My name is Tom O'Hagan, and I'm your host. In this podcast, we talk to inspiring children and young people who have faced unimaginable challenges and have incredible stories to tell. Before we start, I must highlight that this episode talks about female genital mutilation and includes a brief description of the ceremony, which some might find disturbing and so is not recommended for children under the age of 12. The story you are about to hear is of a woman who, aged just 9 years old, became a victim of female genital mutilation, FGM for short. To her, this was normal. It was such an accepted rite of passage in her community that she had no reason to question it. It was only years later, during a near-death experience while pregnant with her unborn child, that she came face to face with the catastrophic health implications FGM can have on girls and women. Galvanized by her experience, she now campaigns to raise awareness of the issue. Here's a clip.
So my whole leg just went, you know, dead. I couldn't move. Then I was sitting, my tummy looked like you have it, something like you pumping, you know, it was coming up and I was sweating. So I called, you know, 101. The ambulance got to my house like 5 to 11. They put gas in my face because I was gone. One of the guys said, well, this girl need help. If not, she will make it.
As the UK's oldest and largest national children's charity, we're known for a lot of things and for helping a lot of people. In fact, in 2019, we supported 294,300 children, young people, parents and carers. We're so big and we do so many things that there are smaller parts of our work that often go unnoticed by the general public. So, we quite like the idea of starting this new series focusing on an area of work that you probably haven't heard of. It's why we decided to start this podcast with a three-part mini-series, focusing on the life-changing work done by our colleagues at the National FGM Centre. The centre is a partnership between us and the local government association. It was initially founded in 2015 with a singular focus on FGM, but was subsequently expanded to other connected harmful practices. We will turn to these other harmful practices in episode 2 and 3 of this mini-series, but today we are looking at FGM itself. Female genital mutilation, or FGM for short, is defined as all procedures involving partial or total removal of the external female genitalia or other injury to the female genital organs for non-medical reasons. It's a traumatic and dangerous practice that is a clear violation of basic human rights. Yet many affected communities maintain the practice because they believe it is a necessary custom to ensure that a girl is accepted within the community and remains eligible for marriage. Families who practice FGM on girls usually see it as a way of safeguarding their future. Despite its illegal status, 50,000 girls and women are at risk of undergoing it in the UK right now. To help paint a picture of FGM in the UK, our colleague Roma, who works at the FGM Centre, caught up with Lethan Bartholomew, who heads up the whole thing.
My name is Lethan Bartholomew and I'm the head of the National FGM Centre. Now, the centre is a partnership between Barnardo's and the local government association. And our aim is to end new cases of FGM by 2030, which is the aim of the United Nations and also the UK government. And in the work that we do, we never forget that we work with to safeguard children and young people. And so for us at the centre, working with children and young people is a value. So it's a core part of who we are. So anything we do, first of all, we think about is about the children and young people and working in partnership with them and helping us. They help us to co-produce the work that we do. So the centre started off working on FGM. And then in 2017, our remit was extended to include breast flattening and child abuse linked to faith and belief. Now, these forms of abuse that happens is comes under the umbrella of a harmful practice. And the United Nations defines a harmful practice as those persistent behaviors that discriminate against people based on could be gender, could be on age as well, and sex, and they cause physical and psychological harm towards victims. And there are different types of harmful practices. There are harmful practices that are traditional. There are those that are re-emerging, and those are there are new ones and emerging harmful practices. They are violation of people's human rights. They are considered to be child abuse. And in many countries, they are considered obviously to be illegal.
What is FGM?
So it's the partial or total removal of the external female genitalia for non-therapeutic reasons. And it's a violation of a woman's or a girl's human rights, and it causes serious harm and danger.
We know that prevalence around the world varies. We know that it's a global issue. We know that there's communities in South America, in Africa, in the Middle East, in the Far East, South Asia, Russia, Georgia. There's many, many different affected communities around the world. What would you say is the scale of the issue in the UK?
Right. FGM is a hidden form of child abuse. And the truth is that we would never be able to know the true scale of FGM in the UK. But there is a prevalence study that was done, that was published in 2015, that says that there's 137,000 women and girls in the UK living with the consequences of FGM.
The consequences of FGM are significant and severe, something that our guest understood firsthand. She experienced something called an ectopic pregnancy, but it can also cause infertility, infections, and even death. Here's Roma and Lethan again.
And what are some of the consequences of FGM?
Right. So there's increased risk of fistula, complications during childbirth, urinary tract infections. You know, there's that women and girls could be at risk of bloodborne viruses like HIV, AIDS, vaginal or uterus or pelvic infections. They can get cysts as well. I mean, in the immediate, it can result in death, or in long term, it can result in death as well. And psychosexual dysfunctions that causes trauma, the emotional scars that women experience could be around flashbacks as well. Well, some women don't, or girls don't even know they experience FGM at all. And it's until they see a health professional, say if a woman is pregnant and she goes to be medically examined, and then she finds out. Some people will know that within their community this happens, and they would remember. And so if you're done at 8, you'd remember, but if you're done at the age of 8, but if you're much younger, you probably wouldn't have any memory of it. And then family members would tell you, oh, it's done as a community activity or family activity, and you know that you've been cut and other girls will be cut as well. So it's, for some, it's not that straightforward. And it would be a very psychologically harmful thing for a woman to be told that she's been cut and she lived all her life never knowing that she was cut at all, and knowing that it was violence as perpetrated by other family members. It's a hard thing to get your head around. So that's why emotional support and psychological support for women who've been cut is so important.
Now, if you haven't heard of any of these terms before, don't worry, because you're certainly not alone. These issues are often hidden away from view, as they are very much considered to be taboo topics within the communities affected by them. It's for this exact reason that we must have these conversations. Today, we are speaking to Mama Silla, who, aged only 9 years old, experienced FGM in her native Republic of Guinea. Decades pass and Mama thinks nothing of it. You wouldn't, if you came from a country where almost every other girl has gone through the same thing. She just got on with her life. She moved to London to study languages and met her husband. Then, when trying for her first child, she encountered the life-threatening consequences FGM can have. As a result of a near-death experience, Mama started to realise its true health implications. But she couldn't see anyone else in her community talking about it. So she decided to speak up herself. She started a charity that seeks to educate the affected communities about the dangers of FGM. And her work has been so effective that the Home Office recently presented her with the Points of Light Award, which recognises outstanding individuals who are making a change in their community. So now, here's Mama with Roma and Sam sharing her story.
So introduce yourself to us.
My name is Mama Sila. I'm a mother of three. One toddler who is 4 years old, and twin girls, they're going to be two next month. And I'm from Guinea, which is in West Africa, and the second highest country with that, at least FKM, 97%. It's like every girl is got, and I'm one of them. I came here as a student. I went to uni, then I finished in 2009, that 18 years now. But I only met my husband like in 2013. But he's from Guinea as well. But I grew up knowing that FGM was normal. I only found out about health implication only 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So let's go back then. Tell me about your life in Guinea, where you were born, who was there.
Yeah, I was born in Labé. It's a town that is 5 hours drive from Conakry, the capital. Grew up there with my mom and dad and my siblings. Then I had my primary school in Labé as well. Then after college, I came to Conakry where I did my university studies and traveled to London.
And what was life like in Guinea?
Very nice, you know, peaceful. And then, you know, you're always with your friends, family, surrounded by family.
So you had quite a happy upbringing?
Oh, yes, I had a quite happy upbringing. Yes, because in my family, in fact, I'm the only girl. My mom and dad have 10 children. They're all men.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So are you mommy's girl or daddy's girl?
Both. And siblings, they all look after me.
Okay, so did you know about FGM growing up?
Yeah, I knew it does happen, but for me, I thought it was normal because, you know, when you see the whole ceremony, it's wearing nice new clothes and everyone coming dancing, food. So obviously be excited. Whenever, if you're not cut, you just say, oh, mommy, I want to be cut.
It's like belongings to the community because, you know, like when you have your neighbor that got gave the cut and you're not cut, you are like an outsider, so you want to belong somewhere.
So talk to me then about the ceremony. What was your experience? What happened?
Like me, when I was caught, I was about, I think, 9. But now it does happen, like, younger than that. 5, 6, sometime. Oh. Weeks, babies, weeks old. So they just, like, woke up that early morning saying we have to go and see someone, you know. So we went around like 6 o'clock in the morning. So we went to this old home. My mom didn't go. I went with my auntie. Like, I was the first one to go. When we came, they gave me something to change with. So I took off my dress and had, we call it lapa, or something just to hide my breast. Then we went in. When we went in, there was the old lady. She's the one that caught, is like the whole town of Labé. She's the only one that was, at that time, caught the cutter. She's nothing like a nurse or anything. She's just an old woman that has been doing it for years. So it's like a kind of her own profession now. So this is what she does for a living. And then she get paid. You see, I was the first one to go in. Then I was pinned down. There's the other lady that was held in my hands. The other two ladies, my legs. And then she cut me with a knife. I did cry because it's really painful. After that, she just gave me kind of bandage. I did bleed for 3 days. It was really painful. Because, again, that time when they cut you, there's nothing like medication that they gave you. You know, you just, it was, they just leave you like that. It was painful. And then after me, the other girl came. She was cut, so crying the same. But she did not suffer like me. After that, we were sent home. A week after, maybe you go back, the lady to check, it's healed now.
So at what point did you start to think, like, actually, FGM is not okay?
I had a miscarriage before I had Ibrahima. So when she checked me, she said, you have ectopic pregnancy.
the whole thing didn't go out. So she said, you can't go home. You need to see the doctor today. I said, all right. She said, just let it go. That was on a Friday. They said, come back Monday. So I came Monday, same result. The blood was still high. They sent me back home. So I was sitting. I came. I sat in the sitting room. So I couldn't get up. So my whole leg just went, you know, dead. I couldn't move. Then I was sitting. My tummy, it looked like you have something like you pumping. You know, it was coming up and I was sweating. So I called, you know, 101. The ambulance got to my house like 5 to 11. They put gas in my face because I was gone. One of the guys said, well, this girl need help. If not, she will make it. So I went there. That was around 12 o'clock. Did the surgery. I woke up around 5. Then he made me thinking. I said, well, this is one of the reasons. There's so many people, women, especially the young, because, you know, we have child marriage as well in Guinea. So they can marry as like young as 14, 15, you know. And many times when they're giving birth, they die. And what they will tell us is like, oh no, the baby was big. That's the reason why the woman died. Sometimes the mom can die and leave the baby. Sometimes they both just die. So I came home. So after that survey, so it made me think, I said, well, our community need help. They need to come out and, you know, need to know things they don't know.
So do you think it's because you went through that kind of almost like near death?
Yeah, that's one thing. But again, I said it before, I grew up knowing it was normal. It's only when I was pregnant with Ibrahim, and then I was told, then, you know, came back to my memories. So I was a volunteer at Family Action. So they do training as well for the whole staff about FGM. So when I went there, there was a white lady doing a presentation on FGM, but they like, just have, you know, a PowerPoint. So when I left, I came, I said to my manager, I'm not going to go to any training because I'm a survivor. I feel like I can do it. She said, yeah, why not? Then she said, okay, you know, you have a charity already. Why don't you use that and go out and speak to your community? And that's what I did. We have a local mosque in Peckham where the Guinean and the people from Sierra Leone go to pray. I called the imam. I said, it would be okay to come to the mosque and speak to women. He's very, you know, he traveled. He go to those FGM conferences, so he knows. He said, yes, why not, mama? You can come. So that's it. That's the way I started doing it. So we did at the mosque. There was a lady there from Guinea. First time she had type 3. When we finished, she just cried. She wept on the floor. She cried. I said, why are you crying? She said, I'm so happy. I've been in here for years. Anytime I want to speak to, you know, I just can't because I didn't see anyone talking about it. She said, I'm so happy.
So, and how have your family felt about your campaigning and your work?
My mom, obviously, she wasn't listening at first. Then I said to her, there's a lot of health implication in it. The last workshop we did, there was a guy from Guinea. He owned the biggest TV, like, channel. So he did a video. He did the whole thing. So when he went to Guinea, they showed it on national TV. My mom was like, goodness me, so now you are on the TV. I said, yes. She said, oh, okay, that's nice. Then she started to understand. She said, oh, I grew up with my sisters, my aunt, everybody's got. So before, maybe, you know, when you have a girl, they have to go through it. You know, you have to be cut to belong to someone, you know, get prepared for your husband.
So there's an idea around, like, maybe purity and, yeah, like, being clean and, yeah, virginal and things like that.
Yeah, I understand there's a lack of education, ignorance, thinking it's, like, religious, which is not the case. So many imams have talked about it.
So what do you think needs to be done to end FGM?
We need to educate people. They need to be educated, you know. They need to be told about health implications. They need to know. It hasn't got nothing to do with, you know, culture or religion, like the way they make us believe. And I believe it's really bad because there's nothing healthy that comes with it. From my own experience, I was lucky enough to survive. for someone to bleed for 3 days, then at that age you didn't die. You have to be lucky, obviously. You know, maybe if you take, for example, some professional here, a gynecologist, for example, that know much about it, and go and train them, you know, show them videos and talk to them about those things like childbirth, ectopic pregnancy, telling them some of the reason is happening because of this cut. They will listen.
So speaking of children then, you have three.
I have three. One, Ibrahim, and his four, Khadija and Fatima, they are three, and they're going to be two next month.
So do you think at any point in their lives you'll teach them about FGM?
Yeah, I will teach them, but I won't cut them. Never. They will never be cut. They're born with healthy organ. Why would I go and cut a girl that is born with healthy organ in the name of what? Sorry, not going to happen. I love them too much to put them through that pain.
But you'd like to teach them about it?
Yeah, I'll teach them about it. Even Ibrahim, when he got to that age where, you know, you understand things, I will tell him.
Oh.
I'm teaching him to be like feminist.
We need more of them in the world, right?
Yes, we do.
If there was one thing that you could say to the UK government that you think that still needs to be done to end FGM, what would it be?
Work with the grassroots, you know. Approach them, talk to them. It's good to do those, you know, high-profile meetings, but it's not like you'll be having a meeting here. It's not every community, every member from practicing community that knew it. It's happening. Maybe I will know because I'm on your mailing list. But a lady that is a survivor, an FGM survivor from Guinea sitting in Croydon or Birmingham won't know it's happening. So go out to the community. Do the meetings there. Take your team. You know, contact someone, you know, like me, for example. Say, Sila, you want to do something in this, like your community. In this area, can you help us set it up? Go out, don't do it behind closed door, only between professionals. It won't work. Let's work things together, you know. Let's do something. Then, if like you, for example, you have 10 women from Guinea that have the same view as me, maybe it can make a difference. Because even me alone, I believe I've made a difference because the community now no more. And I got an email this morning from the Home Office. I'm having this Point of Light Award next week. Yeah, I came to do this out of passion, you know. The charity we run, we never have any funding. But now I have ladies that are very supportive. And yeah, they want to be part of it. Yeah, you get in there. So I'm hoping by next year, we have a whole team of women saying yes. Yeah. And the men as well, we got some men that are very supportive and we are the community. They don't want their girl to be cut.
Oh, wow. And you're making a difference.
I am.
Thanks for listening to Heard and Not Seen. If you found this episode interesting or valuable, please share it with a friend and leave a review wherever you found it. By raising awareness, you will help people like Mama. For more information about FGM, and the other harmful practices affecting children and families, please visit the National FGM Centre website at nationalfgmcentre.org.uk, where you can also find contact details if you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in this episode. Awareness is on the rise, and shedding light on harmful practices in our communities will allow more children and young people to be supported and made safe. For more information on how we help children and young people, please visit barnardos.org.uk. Thanks.